Hello, and welcome to episode 3 of the Whitefoot Cricket Show, the podcast all about celebrating Cornish cricket and inspiring Cornish cricketers. This week we speak to a good friend of mine, Tom Turner. Tom played club cricket for Grampound Road and age group cricket for Cornwall for many years. He's now Glamorgan and Welsh Fire's lead strength and conditioning coach, as well as S&C consultant for the England Lions and England Under-19s. In this podcast, Tom reveals how he prepares players for the physical rigours of professional cricket, how he manages the transition from short format to longer format cricket and back again, and his top tips for hitting the ball further, bowling quicker, and becoming better at running between the wickets. We also ask him about playing cricket in Cornwall and who the best players Tom has played with and against, and the best players he's worked with, including Australia's Manus Labuschagne. This is a must-listen for all the coaches and players out there looking to improve their own game or knowledge of what it takes from a strength and conditioning perspective to perform at the highest level. Enjoy! Tom, thanks so much for coming on the podcast, mate. It's a pleasure to have you here. I hear you're in sunny Spain at the moment, visiting your wife's family and taking some well-deserved paternity leave. Is that right?
That is correct, yes. We welcomed Luca, our son, in September, which with COVID and everything going on at home, it was very tricky to get out to Spain. So we finally managed to smuggle him over here and meet the rest of the family, which is seems like we left just in time because it's been a bit of a nightmare. But yeah, it's good to be here.
Good stuff. Well, enjoy it. On to the podcast. So for those who may not be aware, you're the lead strength and conditioning coach at Glamorgan. So let's just touch on where they are currently. So obviously the season's in full swing at the moment. They've had a fairly decent start to this year's county championship. So they're sitting mid-table in group three, having played seven and lost only twice. Does that match with the targets that you guys set yourself at the start of the season?
Oh, look, I think everyone will sit down and do sort of targets, focuses for the season, etc. I mean, for us, like, we've underperformed probably in Red Bull for several years. I think there's been a big drive at the club to get guys to back their game and be much more positive, which I think the guys have shown. And this year's been great in that we've played some pretty positive cricket and been in some good positions in some games without it probably leading to maybe a result or two more. Yeah, from my side, I've been involved with the club for seven seasons, and certainly this year, just kind of how some of the guys are going about their business and the brand of cricket that Matt wants them to play is notable. And yeah, I think I was chatting to someone the other day, but we've probably had a couple results go against us through trying to win games, which mm-hmm. I think to be positive and play some cricket on the front foot rather than going out there and trying to survive is the way we want to play. So yeah, hopefully moving into the sort of the second half of the Red Bull after T20 and that, we can get a couple more results go our way and probably reflect better on how we've played this year.
And on that subject, so we're sort of moving into the white ball section of the season. So what are your white ball targets? Do you guys see that as a bit more of a free hit, perhaps a chance to win some silverware?
I think in previous years we'd fancy ourselves in white ball. We know we've been developing in red ball, but I think we've got a very strong white ball team, and with one or two key sort of overseas players slotted in there, we certainly back ourselves to get to quarterfinal stage and push for finals day in T20s. I think the 50 over this year is obviously a bit of an open field because with the 100 going on, it's running in line with that. So depending on how many players teams lose, I mean, we've got three guys involved with 100. Sussex, I think, have got something like 8. So Teams will look very different in the 50. So that could be sort of turned on its head a little bit this year. So that'd be interesting.
Let's step away from Morgan for just a second. And focus on how a Cornish lad like you ends up in Wales as lead strength and conditioning coach at Glamorgan. Just explain your path to getting there, what that looked like through college and university and so on.
Yeah, so I mean, went to Truro College at the time, was playing decent level of cricket, Cornwall youth stuff, 21s, trained a bit with a couple of academies. And then yeah, kind of knew I wanted to kick on and go to uni. Education, obviously, I knew that was important and wanted to stay in education. So interest sort of took me down the route of kind of sport and PE, but I kind of soon realised that maybe wasn't for me. And I guess at the same time with my cricket and my experience through cricket was I had a chronic knee injury, which plagued me for years towards the end and basically got fed up of playing with it and the pain. It's now great. And that was through probably quite a few years of trial and error through surgeries, rehabs, working with different professions. So it kind of opened my eyes to that field and that area. And for me, it was about, so the back end of uni then I had the opportunity to do a master's in strength conditioning. Having been involved with the uni S&C setup, I kind of enjoyed that and sort of what that was about, but kind of thought that from my experience as a player as well, I could probably add some more to that. So kind of led me down that path. And yeah, then internship at Glamorgan in 2012. I did that for 2 years, where I did the academy and supported Rob Armand, who's now the ECB national lead. So supported him as the first team S&C. And then right place, right time, Rob left. I'd obviously made a good impression and interviewed for the job and got it. And yeah, very lucky. I mean, there's lots of people coming out of uni with S&C degrees and there's not that many jobs. So yeah, a little bit of luck, but I'd like to think that kind of the work I put in and the experiences in the past and stuff have also helped me get to where I am.
Definitely. And you touched on your playing career there and you did a bit of trialing with second 11s and academies and things like that. So did you see strength and conditioning as another route into the professional game? So an opportunity to be involved with the sport that you love in some professional capacity, even though it wasn't as a player?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, very much ambition as a youngster was I want to play professional cricket. Soon kind of reality kind of around university time was like, no, it's not going to happen for me. I'm way off here. And I guess at the time, I was playing at A level and saw the benefits of the strength conditioning and thought I could have my own take on that within an environment, which sort of the internship gave me that opportunity to be involved at that level and see that sort of professional cricket kind of on the inside. And then, yeah, like I said, very lucky to get a role and be very much a part of it now, which, like I said, very fortunate working a game that I loved as a youngster and still enjoy it now.
And on to the nuts and bolts of what you do. So just describe what a typical mid-season non-match day looks like for you. So from before the players arrive, what are you prepping and getting ready to when they arrive and then throughout the day?
So at the minute, we've had a block of Red Bull cricket. And for anyone that's followed it, it's hectic. I think we had our seventh game in a row the other day. So our only real sort of training day where I have quite a bit of influence would be 2 days out from a game. So we finish a Red Bull game on a Sunday, off Monday, and then Tuesday. And again, with Matt Maynard in charge, it's great that he's bought into what we're doing. We now have I'll arrive at about 8 a.m. I'll check over workloads from the previous game. So flag up if there was anyone that kind of had a real heavy-ish, stressful game coming into that training session. Also, guys coming in from second team, etc. So first thing in the morning, look at the workloads over a coffee, check the gym programs. Lads will come in about 9:30 and they'll do their prep. So they'll do soft tissue mobility for 20 minutes. Then they'll get into their lifting session. So they'll do a short, sharp 20 to 30 minute lifting session. In season, very much geared towards performance. Then about 20 past 10, so net start at 10:30, lads will head out onto the field, some kit set up out there, and that's very much individual. So we've tried to, as I said, I've been at the club for 7 years, we've tried to work with a lot of these lads for a long time, and we want them to be very self-sufficient and know their bodies, know where they're at, know what they need to do to get ready. So we'll usually, when they come out, there's kind of some bits set up for them to do. I'm there for them to sort of dip in and ask any queries if they're not sure, but ready to start nets at 10:30 then. In and around nets, so I like to think I'm quite capable with a slinger and a mitt, so there's plenty of ways for me to help out around that as well. And then we usually finish up training about 1. Yeah, training day, that's kind of that's it in season. I'll be honest, there's a lot less for an SSC to do probably in season than off season. But likewise at Glammy, I feel like I'm slowly making myself redundant because the players are taking so much on board, which is kind of a good thing, I guess.
And we'll look at sort of what an off season looks like in a second. But I just wanted to ask, do you travel to games? And if so, what does that look like? Like, are you running warm ups in the morning? Are you giving throwdowns? Like, what are your responsibilities on match day?
So match day responsibilities. Last year I travelled to all the games, Red Bull and White Bull. It kind of falls in different ways. So if we've got an injured player at home and I've got to work with them at late stage rehab, then I'll stay at home. But to answer your question, on a match day, so usually a kit on the field where the lads can go and do their stretching and stuff individual around their hits in the morning. So the boys will hit balls from sort of in slots from 9 till 10. They'll also do their individual prep around that on a match day. I usually kind of oversee that a little bit. If they're a coach, especially on away games, if there's only two coaches, I'll probably go and help with throwdowns, throwing balls. I'll lead on a bit of a game-based warm-up in Red Bull. When we go White Bull, we probably go a bit more focused and do some sort of speed work as part of the warm-up. And then, yeah, game kicks off. And then usually once the game started, we'll have a 12th and 13th man there. I'll try and keep them as busy as I can. So if it's a seam bowler, commit for them at lunch a couple of days, get them to do a bit of a running session one of the days, a bit of a gym session another day. So at least they're ticking over and they're covering all bases.
And we're now well into the Red Bull season, and it won't be long before we transition into the White Bull season. So from a strength and conditioning perspective, can you just explain what that transition looks like? So what are the difference between preparing a player to play Red Bull cricket versus preparing them to play White Bull cricket?
So with the Red Bull game, it's very much volume. You need to prepare guys to deal with volume and worst case scenarios, because bowlers can end up bowling 40 overs in a game, seam bowlers. If you end up on the back end of a kind of bowling twice or trying to bowl making a team follow on, that's even takes even more toll because they do back-to-back days. Whereas White Ball is much more about speed, explosive. So it's from the current stage of the season, we're moving into White Ball. We've started the lads last week introducing some max speed running just to make sure, though they may be doing it in the Red Bull games, and they probably are a majority, we're just making sure we're getting a set dose in a week so that come White Ball, we know that their hamstrings, their calves have been through that high speed running, they're coping with it fine, there shouldn't be anything that pops up that catches us out. And then reversal, if we go White Ball back into Red Bull block, sometimes you find yourself trying to find extra volume of bowling for the bowlers on training days because they're not getting enough in the week with the T20 only. So you then concern is that you're going to go into a Red Bull game, boys have ticked over on about 20 overs a week, they could go and bowl 50, 60 overs next week. So it's finding a way in those maybe 2 weeks out from that Red Bull game starting is having a 30 over week and a 40 over week. That's not always possible, but it's just trying to work with it as best as you can.
So does that mean if you've got a seamer that might play a couple of one day games in the week, they might bowl 10 overs in both those games, would you then be doing extra bowling with them behind the scenes to make sure they've got the miles in their legs for a Red Bull game that might be 10 days away?
Yeah, I think if you're only playing 250 over games, 20 overs, one net session, 25 overs, you need to find probably another 10 or 15 overs from somewhere that close out from a Red Bull. Bowlers are different as well. Some guys know their bodies really well and know where they're at and know if they need to bowl more. Others will need to look at the numbers a bit more and just keep on top of them. So yeah, you're almost trying to narrow down and have your best guess to their preparation. There's no right or wrong. Like you're not going to get it perfect every time, but it's just trying to keep them in the right place.
And then what are the major differences between what you're doing with the lads pre-season versus during the season? So how does that differ? Is pre-season all about pushing guys to their limit, and then the season is more about just keeping them ticking over? What does that look like?
So the off-season, our off-season, we're probably one of the only sports that has a five-month off-season. So we've got a big window of time to make some good change. So early on in the off season, we'll get the lads in November. We'll do a load of different profiling and fitness testing, and we'll kind of work out for each individual where their weaknesses are and what they need to work on. And then we'll really push that, especially pre-Christmas with no cricket or limited cricket, kind of more skills based stuff. You've got scope there to push lads physically a bit because you're not worried about, I'm not saying not worried about injuring them, but the risk isn't there because they're probably not going to go and bowl the overs or whatever. So you can push them a bit physically. Then as we move into the new year, kind of cricket starts to come in a bit more volume. So you've got to be a bit smarter with your sessions and kind of the content you're doing. You probably introduce more speed stuff. So start getting the guys sprinting and working on that. And then as you move into March, the volume of S&C will drop again because cricket goes up. And it's probably more about the short, sharp, fast stuff. Gym sessions will drop from 50 minutes to an hour gym session down to probably 30 minutes gym sessions.
And let's just focus on some of the specifics. So talk us through what you do when, say, a bowler approaches you, or perhaps it's Matthew Maynard that approaches you and they say, I want to bowl quicker, or we need this guy to bowl quicker. Some of that will come down to technique, obviously, but what can you do to help make that happen?
So you're right. There's a lot to do with technique, but there are, I think, again, very much with the individual. So if a guy comes, bowler needs to bowl quicker, either coming from the coach or the bowler. If they're, let's say they've newly signed off the academy, which they were only on the academy for a year because they got picked up late, they might be well behind in terms of basic strength qualities. And then there might be a lot there of some basic work that would actually help them increase their strength, which would transfer possibly to bowling. More at the kind of top end would be guys of their plyometric and stiffness qualities of their ankles, knees, hips, which are your springs to get through the crease. We'd look into that a bit more detail and measure their jumps and their landings and how well they react with the floor. And then look to if the strength's good, but those numbers are low, then we need to make that strength more applicable to cricket, because they're not a forward in rugby that relies on a one-off push in a scrum or like that max strength. They need to be springy and explosive and reactive with the floor through the crease. There's some stuff to be said with, and I've done it with a few of our bowlers when they usually you get, it's frustrating for the bowler, but your best opportunity to work on this stuff is sometimes in a rehab, because they've got time with them so much and you can do it. But med ball exercises and some weighted ball bowling to help that real specific transfer of kind of the qualities they've developed in the gym closer to something that looks like bowling.
The same question for a batter. So what would you do if a batter approached you and said he needs to hit the ball further and harder? Perhaps he's looking to break into the white ball squad or something like that.
So I'll go an example here. He won't mind. So Billy Root. So when Billy signed for us, he made it clear that I think he saw kind of where the lads were at in the group, and he made it quite clear that he wanted to get stronger to help his white ball game. And to be fair, Billy is like one of our best on the staff at that, the springy stuff I was talking about. He was top end when he joined us, like Super Mario bouncing off the floor. But his strength levels were probably the lowest in the squad. So for Billy to improve his power hitting, he needs to early off season develop this foundation of strength that increases strength. And then we start to look to make that a little bit more specific to some rotational movements in the gym. And then even more specific with some medicine ball throws, some we've done in the past, we haven't done it the last couple of years, but we've done some overweighted and underweighted bats, doing some range hitting in the nets. And again, there's different research out there. There's research to support that. And there'll also be studies that probably haven't had a great effect. For me, if there is studies that show positive effect and a player buys into wanting to chuck that method of training into their approach to as part of their off season, then why not?
And you talked about a weighted bat there. What does that look like? Because you often see baseball players, don't you, before they go on to bat, they've got three or four bats in their hand and they're swinging them. Is that the same thing for a cricket bat? Is it just this huge chunk of wood that people are trying to hit the ball with?
Yeah, so you see quite a few people, I guess people see it on TV, like they'll hold two bats. in the dugout, yeah. and they'll be swinging bats to try and. I think that's more feel and that's proprioception, like prior to the. So they want to pick up their own bat again and feel like, wow, that's light. Kind of what we did is we did a block of training with a cricket bat that was about 10 to 20% lighter than the player's normal bats and one that was 10 to 20% heavier. So we played around with timing. So it's all about your mechanic. You need to kind of trick the body or the skin to hone in that skill better. So by throwing in a heavier implement or a lighter implement, they might, with the heavier bat, be late on a lot of balls. So suddenly they change their timing to get their hips through earlier to then connect with the ball better. And then when they go back to their normal bat, they've transferred some of that feel and that skill. And with that stuff, there's not a, you're not suddenly making guys stronger because they've held a heavier bat, so they're stronger to hit the ball. It's more about the biomechanics of a power hit or a swing.
And the same question for a wicketkeeper. So what do you work on with the keepers at Glamorgan? Is that purely based around agility and explosiveness?
So Chris Cook was our keeper for all the games. He didn't cover anything while keeping over, I think, 18 k's an hour. Basically, at the time, the lads like tempo running and kind of this like mid-speed running where you're not sprinting, but it's repeated high-intensity efforts. Reality is, Cookie doesn't do that when he keeps. So from a running point of view, his conditioning and steady state conditioning comes from some slower sort of interval-based like tempo running or steady state runs. And then from a gym point of view, yeah, I don't really overcomplicate it. You just make their jumps more lateral than the guys that do linear stuff. So the guys that jump in more straight lines, i.e. kind of bowlers, obviously they land slightly side on, but the keepers a little bit more lateral stuff.
So I've got to ask this. So this year we've seen 45-year-old Darren Stevens in the form of his life. What are your thoughts on that? Is he just a physical anomaly? Because look at him, he doesn't look super athletic or have a physique carved out of granite, but he gets the job done. So what are your thoughts on that?
I mean, ultimately, cricket is a skill sport, and those guys that are successful consistently execute their skills to a high level, and he does that superbly, and he's brilliant to watch when he does it. I can't comment on him, but I've worked with individuals kind of you're gearing the question towards, and ultimately it's about finding out there'll be something for him and something for those individuals that execute their skills well that they feel benefits them to staying on the park and being able to bowl the number of overs he bowls. I'm sure that there's certain physical qualities, whether it's just making sure that his calves stay supple so he doesn't tweak a calf and then miss games because of that. If it's something as simple as that, but you're working with those individuals to address those things and stay on the field and perform, and then that's how I'd work with someone like Darren.
And then the follow-up question to that, and this is a common cricket phrase, but is there such a thing as being cricket fit? So, you know, someone might be carrying a bit of extra weight, they might eat the wrong things, enjoy a beer or a glass of wine on a Friday night, but they turn up on a Saturday and they do the business. So as a strength and conditioning coach, do you think that there is such a thing as cricket fit?
I'm going to say yes. I do think people's bodies develop robustness for what they have to do week in, week out. And also, to reverse what you've just said, there are guys that are physically very fit that can't stay on the park as well. So there is such thing. For me there, that answers the question. There is such thing as being cricket fit. Yeah, I think ultimately, I like to feel like I've got a good balance across kind of understanding the workloads, things, understanding the physical qualities. And yeah, for me, if your job is to run a half marathon twice a week, and your training is all geared towards that, and you recover well enough, and you can run the half marathon twice a week and consistently perform at the time you perform at, then you're doing something right. If you suddenly have got to run 4 half marathons in a week, then your training probably needs to change to be allowed you to do that. So essentially what I'm saying is, whatever level of cricket, whether you're just playing on a Saturday and you can get by and pull up a bit stiff on a Sunday, but it's fine because I'm not playing until next Saturday. But if your cricket had to go up a level, then you may have to address some of those things to help you be cricket fit for the next level of cricket, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it does. It does. And then I'm kind of interested in marginal gains, and the Mercedes F1 team, they have a bit of a mantra that everyone, whether they're in the garage or if they're back in the factory, everyone owns their 10th of a second. So whatever they do, however seemingly big or small it might be, they all contribute to taking a tenth of a lap, a tenth of a second off a lap time. So what's your tenth of a second equivalent? So what do you see happen on a cricket pitch that makes you think, yeah, I had a pretty significant role to play in that happening?
I think ultimately, as a strength conditioning coach, I'm a scientist, and lots of cricket is based on, I find cricket as a sport is very opinion based. Oh, he's a gun batter, I need to pick him. Well, why? Look at the numbers a bit more. Who does he score his runs against? On what pitches? So, I mean, from an S&C point of view, it's almost easier to answer that question, because for an example from this off-season is I really targeted with the lads their run twos or turn-in mechanics. So we did lots of work kind of from January through to March. And for lots of the lads, we shaved that 0.1 of a second that you're talking about off their sprint times of turning between the wickets. So for me, I would watch the game, and I said about an example that I put on Instagram the other day, but batter clips it off their legs and they run a two to the fielder and they get home by half a foot. And I know I've worked with that batter all winter and they've improved their time. That's probably been the difference.
What did you work on specifically with those lads to help them improve their time between the wicket?
So it varies with all the individuals again, and I keep going back to this, but it's as much as it is a team sport with individuals from a cricket point of view, it's like that physically as well. So for some lads who had superb turning technique, but they may have not had the physical qualities, i.e. an example would be they turn beautifully, but they collapse through their ankle because they're not strong enough through their calf and stiff enough through their Achilles to push off through that turn. So they're losing time there. So for that player, I would address that with them. It may be that they turn beautifully, but they're carrying quite a bit of body fat. So actually, I don't need to address anything other than they improve their conditioning, drop a few kilos, and they're going to get quicker. They're the easiest ones, but almost the hardest from a buy-in point of view. And then I guess technical would be the other one. So someone can have all the physical, and like we talked about, cricket fit, and like you've got your guys who Ferraris but can't stay on the park. Someone can be super fit, super strong, super quick, but their turning technique can be terrible, and they'll fall behind the lads that turn really well. So it's just for each player trying to work that out and hone in on, right, how can I help you get better at this skill?
And then I just wanted to step away from professional cricket a little bit. So what would your advice be to an aspiring youngster, or perhaps just your regular club cricketer that turns up on a Saturday that wants to improve him or herself physically? So they want to get stronger, faster, more robust, but they don't necessarily have access to the knowledge and the facilities that a professional cricket club does. So what would your advice be to them?
Well, you've kind of given me an in here with my sideline business. We've put together something, Crick Athlete, which everything I've done with from academy through to professional is on there. And it's aimed at those aspiring cricketers where they can access that information and take part of that. But yeah, without dwelling on that too much, I mean, it's a case of, for me, outside of the actual specifics of the training, it's from my own experiences. If you want to take your cricket to the next level, but you don't really enjoy the fitness, it's trying to find bits of it you enjoy to start introducing, to just do little bits. And then ultimately, I'm confident that people will see the benefits of that. And then that gets you've got them hooked, and then you can introduce a little bit more. So, for example, if you're struggling to pain, you get pain in your lower back every time you bowl, you do it at 12-week block of some trunk-based exercises and really improve your strength through there, and your pain reduces and you're playing on a Saturday pain-free, then straight away you're going to be like, I'm onto something here. This has helped me a lot. I wonder what else I could get better at and help me go even further. So, yeah, kind of that would be my take on it, is have a look at how physical might help you. So if you're aspiring, it's obviously, it's competition. You've got to be better in the next seam bowler on your right hand shoulder in the nets. Physical can give you that edge. And if it's club cricket on a Saturday, and if you're struggling to play pain free or certain issues, then just focus on kind of a couple of things that will help that issue. I guess the one big one for me would be as well is no one likes to get injured, but if you do, it can be a pain to get back from. And if you've got a small base of some physical fitness and some understanding, you've given yourself a foundation to start your rehab from, start your progress for your rehab sooner rather than starting from absolute scratch.
And you've done some work with the England Lions and the England U19 squad. You've even been away on some tours. So just describe what that's like. How big an honour is that?
Yeah, I mean, for me, my ambition, when I started strength and conditioning at uni with a view to going into cricket, I kind of always said to myself, right, 10 years, I want to be the travelling S&C for England. I've been working in cricket for 7 years and got some representation at that level is a big honour. And yeah, I was delighted to when I got asked. And yeah, I think something we've touched on before, but I guess it also for me, so you go through stages in life, and I'm now married and my wife's Spanish and we've got a kid, is do I want to be on the international circuit away from home for 240 days a year, staying in hotels or abroad? The answer at the minute, if I'm honest, is probably no. But being able to support the Lions tours or under 19s is a great opportunity for me to do some of that work and also be at home for the majority of the year.
And you'll also be involved with the 100 later this year as the S&C coach for the Welsh Fire. So that's obviously a unique challenge for everyone. So are you doing anything to prepare for that differently? Like, does the prospect of 10 ball overs change how you're preparing bowlers?
I wouldn't say the 10 ball overs would change how I prepare bowlers. I think the 100 is going to present a unique challenge because you get guys coming. You've got guys there who are kind of your guns for hire, travel the world playing T20 or 100 ball cricket now. But they will ultimately probably tick over a pretty low cricket workload year round, get themselves ready for tournaments. And the volume of cricket is quite low, like we talked about. You've got guys coming from England who I think there's a test series after the 100, if I'm right.
Against India, yes.
India at home, yeah. So ultimately, they're going to be having, if there's Red Bull players there, they're going to have in the back of their mind that they need to stay prepared for Red Bull cricket. And then your county guys as well. So it's going to be a unique challenge. And I guess a case of speaking of each player individually and finding out what their aims are during that tournament. Because for some of them, it'll be, there's also quite a lot of downtime. So they might say, right, I want to use this 4 or 5 weeks to really nail my hamstring strength because it's dropped off a bit first half of the year. So I go into the back end of the season stronger and more robust. You might have guys saying, look, if I'm honest, I've got some Red Bull cricket coming up after and I need to find a bit more bowling in and around the schedule. So kind of, can I facilitate some back-to-back bowling sessions with them and things like that? I think outside of, to answer your question, the uniqueness of the game and something completely new doesn't worry me from a volume preparedness perspective. It more about the intensity of the game. So your likelihood of some trauma injuries goes up, which unfortunately it's tough to make players robust to freak incidents, but diving in the field, shoulders, etc. And I guess your risk similar to T20 is sprinting and high speed stuff, that calves and hamstrings.
Okay, and we're going to move on to our quick fire round. So what did it mean? You grew up playing cricket for Ground Pound Road and age group Cornwall cricket. So what did it mean to you to play cricket in Cornwall and represent Cornwall?
As quick fire as I can, as a youngster, all I wanted to do was pull on a Cornwall shirt. All the mates I was playing with had one and I didn't have one, and that was the aim. I guess my one regret is that I didn't play for Cornwall men's.
Yeah.
It was something I never did. So 21, but never played for the men's, and on reflection, wasn't consistent enough to deserve that when there's a lot better players around at the time who were more consistent.
And then the best thing about playing cricket in Cornwall?
I think I heard this answer the other day, so I don't want to be a bit cliche, but the kind of relationships and friendships you make around all the teams. And yeah, you play some hard cricket sometimes, and if you drop a few F-bombs at someone on the opposition, but I think afterwards you can patch it over, and generally you create some quite good relationships outside of the game.
Well, it's nice to know that you listen to the podcast anyway. And then best Cornish player that you've played with?
I'm going to have to go on how he's travelling this year. And I think he's been very unlucky that someone's been called up into the England squad and he hasn't, is Jake Libby.
And why is that?
Just a nightmare to bowl against. Tough player to get out.
I agree. And then best Cornish player that you've played against?
So best Cornish player I've played against, Dave Roberts.
That's a common answer, I would think. And then best batter you've worked with at Glamorgan?
So I've gone all three formats here. White ball, 50 over, Jack Rudolph. Yeah. T20, Colin Ingram was unstoppable for, I think, 2017, 2018, like just churned runs. And then red ball, Marnus Labuschagne.
And then let's just dwell on Marnus Labuschagne a little bit, because he's a bit of a left field character. So what's he like around the place? Does he have a bit of a different aura about him? Like, what's his vibe?
I think what Marnus does is he brings a lot of positives. He backs his game. I think if for anyone that's watched him, he's slightly unorthodox, strong through the leg side.
And what's he doing at the moment? Because he's obviously had a pretty bad run of form since he's come into the Glamorgan side. So is he doing anything differently in nets? Is there stuff that he's working on technically?
I reckon if you go back through and watch some of his dismissals, and this isn't, I don't want to sound, what's the word? Got a negative tone towards it, but there's a few missing the stumps, I'd say. And that's where I talk about a player who backs his technique. Will be very disappointed that he's getting given out because he feels he's got all bases covered.
Well, I saw the Darren Stevens one and that looked like it was hitting middle of middle. But anyway, we'll move on. Best bowler you've worked with at Glamorgan?
Michael Hogan.
Why is that?
Test level bowler when he was operating, when he started for us in 2014, 15, 16 season, like could have played test cricket, didn't, like, yeah, just unbelievable bowler, consistent, test pace, skills.
Then I want to ask just best batter you've seen on the county circuit, period, full stop, for anyone.
So I don't like these questions. So I'm going to throw them back at you. So I didn't want to pick, there's so many international players. And so I wanted to pick someone that hasn't played international cricket. So the batter one I struggled with, if I'm honest, because it's just splitting hairs. I'm going to say, and this is a backing a horse here, there's a lot to come from Glamorgan's own Kieran Carlson.
Yeah.
And okay. Probably lots of people wouldn't, looking at his stats on last year, would be laughing, but I think there's something there. He started really well this year. Let's see where he's at in 2 years' time.
He's averaging nearly 50, isn't he, this year? So yeah, he's sort of really announced himself. But and then the other question is, best bowler you've seen on the county circuit?
Again, I've gone with someone who hasn't got a test cap, and it's the same guy I've mentioned as Michael Hogan.
Fair enough. Okay. Well, Tom, that sort of brings us to the end of the podcast. Thank you so much again for joining us. I hope you enjoy the rest of your time in Spain with your wife and her family, and look forward to catching up with you soon.
No, thanks for having me. Pleasure being on here.
Been a pleasure. Cheers, mate.
So, another episode done. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. I thought it was really interesting, actually, to step away from the actual playing side of things and look at the game from a strength and conditioning perspective and what players need to do and are doing physically to be ready to play multiple formats at the highest level and then switch back and forth in the space of 1 or 2 weeks. So I thought that was really interesting. And if you want to know more, it's well worth following Tom on social. He shares lots of useful training tips and guidance. You can follow him on Instagram at Tom Turner Strength and on Twitter at Tom Turner 90. You can also follow the show, of course, on Twitter at W Cricket Show and Instagram and Facebook at The Whitefoot Cricket Show. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time with a really interesting eye-opening pod. But in the meantime, please do like, comment and share wherever you're seeing our posts. We're also starting to build up a little bit of a back catalogue. So if this is your first time tuning in, there are a couple other episodes for you to get stuck into. And one last thing from me before I sign off. The Whitefoot Cricket Show is now officially working in collaboration with the Cornwall Cricket Board, who will support and help publicise this podcast. So Joe and I are both really delighted with that. We look forward to working with them moving forward. And finally, thanks again for listening, everyone. Until next time, go well.